Welcome to the Urban Complex, a system of interrelated, emotion-charged ideas, feelings, memories, and impulses. This name takes the definition and lays out what a listener should expect. A podcast where ideas, feelings, and memories collide, leading towards meaningful change. I'm co-host Chris Richardson. Please enjoy the journey with the Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
All opinions by Chris Richardson, Dominic Poppin, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Arizona State University, the Arizona Department of Education, or the Arizona Commerce Authority. Any endorsement of or messages from sponsors are solely supporting the production of this podcast. There is no relationship further than podcast purposes with any sponsor unless separately created with another entity. Enjoy the Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
Hey, Dom, how's it going? Anything top of mind for you as we get this podcast going?
No, man, you know what? We just had our monthly Smart Region gathering where we gather all the cities together. And it was just exciting to see kind of the continued progress. We just found out that a couple more of our cities were certified under the What Works City program that Bloomberg runs. So okay. The town of Gilbert and the city of Glendale both became certified. And they joined a handful of other cities, Scottsdale, Tempe, Phoenix, that participate in the program. So it was good to see them continuously striving to become better, smarter, more data-driven cities. So it was just a good time. I think Phoenix recently won an award about one of the top 50 smartest cities in the country. And Tempe just also received the award. Remember Mark and Rosa and their data around wastewater? They won some award around that as well. So it's just a fun time because it seems like smart cities are being championed or celebrated right now. So it's good in my
opinion. Yeah, we normally talk sports and we jinx things. So we'll keep that off the topic, fingers crossed. We don't normally toot our own horn. In fact, closer to my world, the Arizona State University Smart City Cloud Innovation Center powered by Amazon Web Services just got a civic engagement award by IDC and their Smart Cities award. So yeah, there's just a lot of great stuff going on from the hard work and you know, we'll have to get some of these new folks on as stories and whatnot. And great to hear Mark and Rosa from one of our former guests. So
continuing to push change. I love it. Yeah. It's we definitely will have to have maybe someone from Bloomberg on the show because we had them on to the regional meeting. And I think it incentivizes some of the cities to go after it. So it might be a good story to tell. Speaking of stories, who do we have on for today? Whose story are we listening to?
All right. Well, Rob Lloyd, you know, it's interesting. He is a CIO of the city of San Jose, one of the largest cities in the nation, plus with a tech storied center of where they're located. So he should be great. He's also well known in this space. He calls himself Civic Tech Evangelist. And it's funny, I actually do know him from his Avondale days. I remember we were on a private board, just discussions, it's not like a formal board or not, but it was at a tech get together. And we were talking about one of the topics and he was at the CIO of the city of Avondale at the time. I was a senior director at Honeywell. And I just remember, boy, that guy really has a good head on his shoulders. He both sounds good in what he's talking about, but you can tell he backs it up by what he does. And I'm sure he'll give our audience a great, great overview. How about you? Have you ever run across Rob?
Yeah, only kind of on the peripheral of, you know, just being in the smart city space, you know, obviously run into him at conferences, listen to him at conferences. We were actually on a Verizon Voice of the Customer strategy session not too long ago, not sure with COVID time, but you're right. I mean, he's just very impressive. Someone I've looked up to for quite a while for the work he's been able to get accomplished in San Jose. So I'm really excited to hear the story. I think there's going to be a lot of good advice for someone, a nerd like me, around operations, because he always tends to discuss operation kind of
thing. I think that was the first time I've ever heard a COVIDian slip. You probably want to go to a concert. I mean, can you think about it? Like, when's the last time you've been to a concert? I don't know. It's been years for me. So,
yep. Can't even imagine what the last time was, but hopefully they're coming back around too.
Cool. Well, let's get Rob on the episode, shall we?
All right, here we go. Maybe he'll put a concert on for us.
Support for this episode of The Urban Complex comes from Worldwide Technology.
What if we could connect people to new possibilities, turn thinking into a way forward, solve problems before they become a problem, and share the future with everyone? We can. At WWT, we connect businesses to technology to make the impossible possible, to reach better decisions faster, to accelerate progress. Together, let's make a new world happen.
All right, Rob, please let Dom and I give you a warm welcome to our podcast, The Urban Complex. Thanks for joining.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, excited to be here. So, it's been a while. Why don't you just start and tell us a little bit about you? We find that our audience really likes to kind of know how folks got to where they are today before we jump in. So just tell us a little bit about you as a person, your background, and how did you lead up to being at the CIO of San Jose? And we'll talk about that in a little bit.
That sounds good. So dedicated public servant for 23 years now. You and I joked a little bit earlier that this is exactly my fifth anniversary date at the city of San Jose. Opted for public sector over private sector options back in 1998. And part of that was just the idea of legacy of work. So at the end of your career, what would you be most proud of and not regret? And so went into public service, started at the city of Colorado Springs, then went to become chief of IT for Colorado Parks and Wildlife and got to run a statewide organization, then was a CIO and utility director in Oregon, then was CIO for city and utilities in Arizona, where I got to meet you guys. And I've been at the city of San Jose, the 10th largest city in the country since 2016. And a proud girl dad. And if I have anything to be grateful for, it's a loving and forgiving family.
You started your career when you were, what, 15?
I know. Yeah. Zoom filter. Zoom filter makes me look younger.
You got the Zoom Botox, huh? Well, congratulations on the 5-year. What a stint. We'll come to that in a minute. So you skipped over that Oregon city, Ashland. So are you a Shakespeare fan?
Oregon Shakespeare Festival. You know, actually, I never went. I went to the outdoor one, but not the indoor one. It was kind of odd. It's very wealthy. And I think our average age was like 52 or something like that. And so we were kind of the odd couple out sometimes, but it's a amazing community asset.
I just remembered I was on a road trip one time between California and Washington, where I grew up, and I stopped in Ashland during the festival, and I thought I was like in a medieval world. It was crazy. Okay, so in all seriousness, let's bring it to San Jose. Tell us about what your role is, kind of what any background about the city of San Jose. Just help us give the context to kind of lead into the episode of the Urban Complex.
Sure. So maybe connecting with the previous question, a lot of the fun I've had in my career is by taking on these big challenges to help organizations kind of unleash their brilliance of their people in their public mission. So at 21, got to turn around an ERP project and a computerized maintenance management project for the city of Colorado Springs. Then we did a brand new approach to license administration at the state of Colorado. Then consolidated in IT for both of those organizations. Arizona, when I went there, we had a lot of chronic technical failures, and there were some procurement and ethical violations that they brought me in to change there. So when San Jose opportunity came up, honestly, I looked for about a year to find my next job and turned down 12 jobs and accepted the 13th and hoped that the 13 number wasn't a bad thing. But San Jose was at the front of a journey. And so during a decade of deficits, the city had reduced the size of the staff from 150-ish and a budget of about $50 million. And it went all the way down to 71 employees with a budget of $21 million, supporting a $4-plus billion organization with 7,000 employees. And we say San Jose is a city from A to Z. We literally help 17 million people take off every day. And we literally feed a red panda at our zoo. And everything in between, economic development, redevelopment agency, engineering, massive construction, development services transformation. And they said to be the city we want to be, technology can no longer be a back office function. It needs to be a
partner. So those numbers were the IT staff and the IT budget.
Yeah. And actually, the Decentral was actually quite small, too. We identified about 40 overall. So you had the 10th largest city in the country operating with fewer people, IT people, and about the same budget as Scottsdale.
Wow.
And so the scale, very different. And you have to take a very different approach to that. But we've got 1 million-plus residents, 80,000 businesses of the world's leading global firms in the heart of Silicon Valley. And we are the leanest big city in the country. And even our strategic plan, we identified of the top 20, we're either the smallest to the third smallest on every resource aspect. So you have to do things differently. You have to be able to partner masterfully. You have to be able to procure differently. And you have to be able to have the structural approach where you can make the changes last. So because once is nothing. One of the great assets we have is that Silicon Valley DNA and a lot of partners. But we had a lot to turn around. And so just some of the metrics from our first strategic plan and what council had assigned us was the city of San Jose. We had the, in the Gallup survey for customer or employee engagement, we had the lowest score of any IT department in the country. So literally people who were processing sewage at our wastewater plant were happier and more engaged in their jobs than our team.
No, congratulations from that one. Sorry. Wow.
Yeah. What a mess. We had a customer satisfaction rating in the 70s, good, but not great. We had a 46%+ attrition rate for 4 years in a row. Budget was continuing to decline. Our project success rate was less than 5% over 4 years. So we said, we're going to turn these things around. And one of the great things we had is when you actually talk with the IT staff, they were asking very sophisticated questions like, how can we help our city? How can we connect to where it wants to go? Not, I want more pay. I want more benefits. I want more recognition. They said, how can we be part of the solution? And say, these are people who get it. Something else is wrong here. And so now we're at 80%+ on our project success rate. Our customer satisfaction is 91%, 92%. If you take, we quadrupled our Gallup survey score. Still not where we want it to be, but good there. And we've added 50% of budget, and we are now at almost 100 employees. I think it's 101 as of this new fiscal year, start July 1st. But we also had a lot of partnerships to address the needs that our departments were telling us that they had. And that goes to the kind of the smart cities theme, I think, that you guys speak to, is how can organizations reposition, recognize the role of technology and data to be that transformative power to deliver better services and be more responsive to your community.
Curious, one or two things, like you sound like you had engaged IT staff. You definitely had a low bar, but you didn't. I mean, clearly you made some massive changes. Anything to highlight that's not necessarily smart, but just organizationally, like where do you fit in the organization? How did you get that turnaround? Tell us about that. That's really interesting, because I'm sure other cities might face, hey, how do you be smart when you have these other challenges? And maybe they can relate to that.
Yeah, I think the first lesson is you have to have a structural conversation. It's not just a want and you hire some hotshot. You actually have to very quickly translate that question into what does the organization need and how are you going to build a better structure and process to do that? So coming in, I asked for three powers, which is to review and approve all IT spend through purchasing so we could create some clarity and some coherence around our spend. Budget, our intent, I need to approve all the IT spend. And number three, on any significant personnel changes to the IT structure of the organization, as CIO, I needed that voice as well. Then structurally, we said, and this is part of my interview, and it actually aligned with some of the direction that the staff was going already, which was you need representation of technology at three layers to be valid over time. One is you need hopefully a deputy assistant city manager in the city manager's office pushing that cross-domain work and that tech and data thinking in those budget decisions, in those structural decisions, in those policy decisions. So we need a role over there, and we have Kim Harkness. We need someone on the political end to kind of harness and shape what our electeds are asking so that we can connect the vision that they have of the world as it should be with the world as it is that staff deals with, so we can bring those closer together. And that takes some dedicated focus, and we have a mayor's chief innovation officer for that. And then you need a CIO who by themselves is indispensable but insufficient, but need to execute and sustain the work that we do in a way that's going to last and keep on delivering additive value. And the last thing I would say is the engagement piece, which is the hardest. And we've had some trials and tribulations. And when you promote over history, your staff, you get promoted based on being the best technical person. And then you invert that and say, no, we're going to promote the people who deliver impact. And can harness the organization and master purchasing and master contracting and master coaching and mentoring. It was painful. It's taken 4 years, but there's a couple points of courage where my own staff was saying, Rob, don't do that. It's just ammunition to criticize the changes. And it's like, no, this is an act of courage because we're trying to be something different. And then our own senior manager said, we're going to form our own team because we have a bigger role to play than we've played in the past. And so there's a lot of human element. And I can wrap just by saying we do have a saying here that technology is powered by people. And by that, we mean technology is hard, but it's the easiest part of the equation. And so we really need to make sure the human latency, the comfort level, the knowledge, the practice, the processes, that in government is where you focus first. And in private sector, you probably can just throw money at something to do a new process or new technology. But in government, you have a lot of entrenched opinions and powers. And that's okay, because we have to go for the long haul. But you have to respect that in your kind of organizational design.
Yeah, that's terrific. I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. I spent a lot of my time focusing on, you know, trying to innovate in the governance and operational models to build new partnerships, to deliver new services. And so this, Rob, talking to you has been a dream come true so far. So I appreciate all the advice you've already, you know, provided to our listeners today. And you've kind of started to really dig deep into some critical kind of roles or ways cities can really think about going after smart cities in a new way. But let's take a step back a little bit and let's think about a little bit from a higher level. You know, being a smart city podcast and really trying to focus on how are we building smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow. We've had a little bit of fun with our guests in asking them, you know, what is a smart city to you? Because as we all know, there's a million plus different views on what a smart city is, but we'd love to get your kind of take. If you could boil it down, you know, what's a smart city in your opinion? What's working, what's not? And then how are you, you've kind of mentioned this already, but maybe how can you tie that in directly to some of the work that you're doing in the city right now?
Sure. Smart cities, you know, poor marketing term, by the way. If we could go back, we'd say, okay, it's not that you were dumb before and it's not just cities. So I'm not sure how we came up with that term, but really what we're talking about is focus on using a multidisciplinary approach to kind of solve the pains of our community and our organization in a way that aligns with the city's mission and what it says it's important to it. So for me, the definition is that structural multidisciplinary problem solving that often is hard to find and sustain in governments that are bureaucratized for a reason. They do one thing and do it well. And the challenges in front of us, blight, housing insecurity, justice reform, food necessities, COVID response or public health response, none of those ends at a border and none of those is one department. So this is the state of where governments are now to address the problems in front of us. We have to have a different approach that collapses those barriers as much as possible in intentional ways.
Yeah, that's, I mean, just absolutely incredible and amazing. I hope all the city managers out there will be listening in, because that's perfect piece of advice. You know, as you mentioned, none of these challenges stop at departmental barriers. They don't stop even at, you know, municipal boundaries, let's be honest. So we often say, you know, we can't do this alone. Collaboration will be the next competitive advantage for any city. So you mentioned the importance of partnerships with your work at the city. Are there any particular partnerships that you want to highlight in the smart city context? You know, which ones and what are you doing together? And maybe if there are results, please speak to them.
Yeah, we have a lot of pride. And I would even challenge you both. Think back on the work that had the most impact in your career. And at least for me, when I think back, it wasn't that we got budget. It wasn't even the technology was profoundly awesome. It was who I got to work with and the impact we had on the people on the other end of it. And so even to take one step back before I dive in, even the question about centralization, decentralization, it absorbs IT leaders too often when the reason you have this discussion is it's the wrong question. It's where the service design needs to be highly responsive and closest to the customer and department. And where it needs to be hyper-efficient and optimized and it can be centralized. But if you're a CIO, you can actually have a lot of impact to partner well when you use your powers, I guess, benevolently. It is you have to create good value and that trust relationship feeds on itself. But when you just do it for the power or authority, then people lock into their roles. And so the partnerships we had, and let me kind of preface this another way too, is as a practitioner in civic tech, I'm most impressed by the people and aspire to be the people who get things done. It's not innovation by press release. It's not just a good idea. It's what results can you show from all those efforts. And so when we partner with Verizon, AWS, and TransCore to save 24 seconds off of every emergency trip we have through a route-aware vehicle routing, emergency vehicle routing, rather than them just getting to the intersection, flashing their lights, checking the intersection's clear, and then go through, it pre-clears a whole path for them. And so they can, as the firefighter on the truck said, this is a game changer. I can get where I need to go without without having to fight or worry. And you had even 16% of all trips had some kind of accident in them. So you can save that and get $1 million plus more each year because we're hitting higher thresholds with accounting. Another one would be Urban Logic, where we took a look at Vision Zero goals and how do you reduce traffic fatalities and accidents. And we looked at what using AI models, ML models, machine learning models, was what actually impacts accidents and fatalities. And you assume that it's the street design. But the research we did and those models, as we worked them out, said it's actually where it is, what's around it, natural environment. But the streetscape itself is correlated with traffic safety and fatalities, but it's one of the less correlated ones. You actually have to worry about how you plan environments even more. And so it challenges you to think differently because we took the data from planning, economic development, and transportation engineering to kind of take this approach and have deeper insights. Another one, cybersecurity, digital privacy. And we're partnering on that one and trying to create actually a baseline privacy policy and privacy principles that all cities can adopt. And we've been able to coach some of our peers around, here's a cybersecurity work plan that's NIST-based and what you can focus on and what you need to buy that provides additive layers. And I'll give you five more really quick. So our partnership with Eastside Union High School District and SmartWave, we proved out a Wi-Fi deployment model. When COVID hit, schools and families came to the meeting virtually and said, you need to take this model and apply it now because our children are falling behind. So we went from 30,000 people covered to 100,000 people covered within about 8 months to 200,000 people covered now. And by the end of this year, beginning of next year, we'll have 300,000 people covered by these Wi-Fi networks in Title I attendance areas. And that's a proxy for poverty. Title I is 80% or higher free and reduced lunch. And we also partnered with AT&T to get cellular hotspots for those that weren't necessarily covered in those Wi-Fi areas. And those were through the school districts and they're linked through libraries plus devices plus training. So you can make impact. And a lot of that then connected also with food and necessities. When the county was overwhelmed with health response, they said, can you take over feeding and necessities delivery for the entire county? And so we've surpassed 150 million meals deployed and worked across 290 partners. That's how many in San Jose that we have that are feeding and providing necessities for folks. Wow. And that's the scale that you have to hit sometimes if you're going to have impact in ways that make a lot of lives better. And the last two I'll talk about is 911. We partnered with Google.org, redesigned how 911 looks, and so we could absorb calls from 911 to a 311, save them about 35,000 calls a year, so they can hit their first response thresholds. But it also took a technology approach to say, how can we use virtual agents, language translation to collapse the barriers and actually use 311 as a way to open up government to all of our residents without barrier. So you want to call us, you want to email us, you want to do a direct chat, you want to use a chat bot, you want to use a virtual agent and language translation both ways so you don't have language line barriers. Those things are possible. And then the last one I'll talk about is one we said no to, which was actually a big pitch we had, multi-million dollars, to put smart sensors up on 69,000 of our light poles. Sounds transformative, right? And San Diego at the same time was doing one, and we're like, should we compete with them? You know, this is a good offer in some ways. But then we looked at maintenance. We looked at privacy. We looked at security of those devices and how the data would be used. And we said, the city's not ready for it. And the company might not be ready for it either because this scale hasn't been proved out yet. And so sometimes the most important decisions you make are the ones you say no to. And those are the cases where we say, yeah, we can do a lot of work, but we need to think better of it sometimes. Hopefully that wasn't too overwhelming.
No,
Rob, most of our guests have about 10 more. Is that all you got?
let me write down a few more. If that's game on.
No, but seriously, let me follow up on one before we ask the next question. Yep. Actually, two that are kind of – so it's really interesting where you actually design policy intended not only for your city but for other cities. Have you seen that that cyber policy is getting uptake from others? That's really kind of a cool concept.
Yeah, actually in two ways. So we were also part of Arizona Cyber Threat Response Alliance. We created the training program, so Frank Rimmelman. And so you could actually build the cyber warrior you needed of the future rather than the cyber auditor that you had of the past. Intel sharing and the structure for doing that is a third party. But then the policy work and the contracts, we were lead agency and we invited Santa Clara County, our county, plus the city and county of San Francisco. Why don't you join with us? We'll evaluate what ended up being 214 procurement offerings across 7 packages. So literally, if anyone needs it right now, we have a cooperative vehicle contract where you can get IT assessment services, you can get crisis response, you can get training and habituation, perimeter defense, you have AI-based tools, and there's one I'm forgetting. But there's a toolbox there. We said we need to put that in front of ourselves and everyone. Because after the cyber disaster has happened is the worst time to procure because you're already stuck, lost, and hurting.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, talking about getting stuff done, that was just amazing. I think you could become the use case for local government innovation and actually getting the projects done. So congratulations on all the success. I mean, I think I know the answer to this next question, so maybe we'll focus on the back end. But, you know, in 2016, we noticed that the city made this bold claim that you'd be the most innovative city in the U.S. by 2020. I mean, I think that list alone just helps answer that question. So I don't even know if we need to talk about how that journey's been going. But, you know, where do you think you talked a lot about it, but where do you think you progressed to from 2016? And what, I mean, you just highlighted a lot, so maybe you don't have to highlight any other things. But, you know, organizationally, we also saw that you hired a chief innovation officer. So maybe take some time to discuss how the chief innovation officer kind of interacts with you and helps advance your work in the smart city space.
Yeah, and it's actually a good thing to have. And I have some CIO peers who lament having a chief innovation officer and where the borders are and who's in charge of what. And the coaching I give them, Dominic, is if that's the conversation you're having, you're in a bad place. And so same as when I hired our CISO, I was going to put them in a different office and got some feedback from cybersecurity friends. It's like, no, you're a CIO who gets security. If you want maximum impact, put them in IT so that operationally you can drive security. And it's joint. And so don't fall into the old models. I was like, what the hell? They're absolutely right. And so we hired one and our mission from day one, we said, above all things, you and I need to be the best CIO CISO tag team in the country. And so that was our mission. On the chief innovation officer, we had an amazing woman, Shireen Santosham, really drove the digital divide issues and some of the innovation partnerships. Jordan Sun is our current one, and he takes things to scale. He's gone like purely off of no money and goodwill. He's got a team of like 40 now. Digital services, how you use data for equity. And so when you team up and have the approach of, you know, we're going to do great things together and you're committed to that, you can do some very powerful things. And so Jordan and I were just actually texting before the session. He's saying, hey, I'm going to do a LinkedIn release. Can I include your name without you getting upset at me? And I was like, yeah, absolutely, man. That's one of the easy ones. But that ability to partner, he can harness the elected will really well because that's his focus. And then if we can combine that with the city manager and the city manager council form of government, we can actually put that as priorities, funded efforts, and have people who want to own the success. What's the old Kennedy line? Is success has many parents, failure is an orphan. Yeah. Well, we want to have lots of kids with lots of parents, and that's the structure that we have. But all those things I rattled off, the previous strategic plan we had that I created in 2017 for 2020 was really at the basics. To be honest, it's like we're going to do the core things really well, because those are going to support the aspirational things we want to do. And now we have a new strategic plan that was just approved in June and goes to council in August. And it has 5 pillars that are very transformational because we can build on the work that we've done together.
Awesome. So you're going to be the even more innovative city with this. Seriously, how do you quantify that? Was there a way to demonstrate that progress? Or like, yeah. Clearly the job's not done. You can just tell you're just getting going, but
yeah. It's actually, Chris, it's a kind of a 5-way measure. One is we want to say customers are satisfied. So, and there's a trust measure, which is our reliability. our customer satisfaction. There's a change measure, which is our project success. How well are we doing? There's an engagement measure, which is the Gallup score and our retention. So we have about 10 to 14% attrition now compared to, you know, healthy churn compared to that 40-ish percent before. And then the last piece that we had was actually the digital city survey. We said these people will actually do an exhaustive survey that looks like at your ability to use technology to operate effectively, to engage with your community, and to do innovative service delivery and novel service delivery types. And so if that's going to be the goal, we had never placed in 16 years. We went 8th, 6th, 2nd to 1st. And so on all of our measures, with a little bit of fuzz on the engagement one, is we didn't do another survey, so we couldn't see how we were in the last, in that 2020 year, just the funding decision. We hit so all the things.
Anything you can point out there on the horizon with the strategic roadmap or your smart city roadmap of things that you're super excited about that are in works?
Yeah, I think this is the chance for technology to truly be an equal partner in how the organization is going to be different for the next 5 and 10 years. And so I'll rattle off the 5 pillars. Number one is technology is going to be focused with departments on equity. Everything that we saw from the pandemic and how our departmental peers are reshaping their services and setting their priorities has an equity flavor to it. What they say is they don't know what that means yet. They're still figuring it out, but they know technology and data are going to have to close gaps, and so they can make better decisions. And because there's not this world of money that's going to be coming at them, they're hearing, we need you more than ever, and you're going to have less to do it with. Technology and tools are the only things that close that gap. So we're going to be a partner in that. Another one is a secure and resilient city, which is we see more natural disasters than ever. We see more cybersecurity disasters than ever. So we have to build the organization that allows us to withstand all of that. Then you have optimization, which means because of the resource, the long-term research or resource push, and you look at the structural budgets that cities and counties have, you're going to have to hyper-optimize in some spots. You can't waste resources. Then there's a drive to digital, which means that there is now a digital staff and a digital public. And how we interact with each other is going to be very different. And we can solve some of the access issues through that digital service push. And that's our mission. And the last one is powerful partnerships, is we need to be able to procure and partner better than anyone, because with our resource picture, that's our secret sauce. We're not going to have this ungodly amount of money. So instead, we're going to use the power of partnerships like we have in the past to solve problems that others can't.
So you mentioned that money isn't going to fall out of the sky, like, but hold on a second. Aren't there stimulus funds? Everyone's preparing. Like, how is City of San Jose responding to federal money, infrastructure money, stimulus money? Any thoughts there? Like, where are you focused as a city? Where are you focused as an IT organization?
Yeah, and I think, Dominic, you and I were on a call where a similar question was asked, and my advice is still the same, is if the money isn't flowing your way, the one-time money, and you have to make that distinction, these are one-time dollars, not ongoing ones. So this is where you invest in the transformation that's going to make you more efficient, more responsive, but you're going to have to do it once and well. But if you're not at the table and people aren't calling you saying, we need to invest in you, then somehow you've lost your way. Because if the money's not flowing, we got calls from our city manager's office like, we need to invest in you. What do you need? And we laid out our drive to digital and our pandemic plan. Some of that has some equity pieces in it as well, but we're going to be getting about $7 million total out of all the COVID funds to reinvent that digital public and digital staff, have actual projects. There's some cybersecurity monies that we're intending to spend if the infrastructure bill comes through as expected. So all of that, we have to have the fiscal acumen, but also the want and trust from our peers to be a part of that conversation. But literally the budget director and the city manager were giving me calls to say, what do we need to invest in for you? Because without you, the org stops. And so to have that position of trust and respect is something we've worked really hard for.
Yeah, and Rob, just quickly to go back to the kind of the plan and the 5 pillars, is that publicly available at this point, or is it still, because I thought you said it was getting approved?
It is publicly available, and it's approved by our Smart Cities and Service Improvements Committee. So we have service area council committees. Awesome. So that we can get council feedback. Remember, the world as it should be, world as it is, bringing them together. That's what the council committees are for. And then council approves final work.
An accessible by a link that we can share with our audience?
Yeah, if you go to sanjoseca.gov under the IT page, you'll see strategic planning. You'll see our previous one, current one. We'll see some updates. And then every year, you'll see us post, and then we update it two or three times through the year, our IT work plan for the year. So all the things that we're getting done to achieve those strategic plan goals. So literally, every IT employee and every customer can see city roadmap, IT strategic plan, IT work plan, personal goals, and how you connect all the way from one end to the other. And so every city employee who works a technology or data function can see what they're doing and why it matters.
Yeah, that's incredible. Yeah, I asked that because I would love to, as we push this out socially, I want to make sure we have a link to that, because I think it's going to be such a phenomenal tool for other cities to emulate and copy and pivot towards their own community. So appreciate that.
It does take work though. And I've had some of my own staff go, this is so much work. And it's like, yeah, you have to invest in the relationship. It doesn't just take care of itself.
Well, we'll have to have you back in that time to see how this next iteration strategic plan leads to another 40 things you highlight and blow our audience away again. I mean, that was amazing. You're like, oh, sure, just answer this one. And
can we keep up? My
hands. Dom and I are like, wait, how do we keep
my hands?
Our notes?
Well, cool. So, oddly enough, I'll be honest with you, Chris. We have to be better about telling our story. We're so focused on the work. Bloomberg scolded us. So Bloomberg gave us a bronze certification. We almost missed it, actually. And they said, all right, we read more deeply. You've done everything we asked for, but you score yourself poorly. And it's like, yeah, we always see the next thing that we have to do. And it's like, well, stop that. Take credit for the good work you did.
We'll tag Bloomberg in this episode. That's our goal. Like, we want to find the best stories, get them out there, give people inspiration, but also help, like, just kind of breathe and know kind of what you accomplished, and it gives you life to do the next thing. And plus you learn from others. So that's great. But as we wrap up, is there anyone that you're particularly appreciative of that's helped you? Seems like you've had a storied career. You've been in a lot of places. And if in doing, as you've learned about Dom and I and the Urban Complex, if you think they'd be a great guest, let us know as well. We'll try and get them on the show. But anything you want to highlight there in that regard?
Yeah, let me take kind of that structural approach. I'm a big fan of the people who dream and do it, right? And one critique of civic tech and innovation is that success by press release. And we really have to stop that, because that undermines the trust that we generate. So the people I would say is the chief innovation officers, the ones I mentioned, Jordan Sun, Sreen Santosham, really thoughtful people on how to harness a community around specific tech and innovation goals. Our deputy city manager for San Jose, partnership is the reason we've been able to get as much done as we do. And that's Kip Harkness. He's remarkable. You'll be blown away by him. I admire the work of Michael Sherwood, which he told me that he was on your show. And we actually had one of the projects that we said no to, made an introduction for him and NTT and Dell. And they ran with that project, and he did, I think, a better job than we would have with it. And it's been transformational for Las Vegas. But you also have Ted Ross Los Angeles. Jean Holm is amazing, if you know her. She's now, I think, the deputy mayor for LA, but she was their deputy CIO and then their chief data officer. And we'll see what happens when Eric leaves. Eric Garcetti, their mayor. Mark Masongsong and Herman Shandy from Urban Logic. If you want to see a company that's small but can do amazing things, Urban Logic has really impressed us. Tony Batala, if you want to see a mid-sized city that punches out of its weight class. Aaron Hattersley, Jen Carter from Google.org. They focus Google's resources and staff to problem solve in a multidisciplinary, de-siloed way. Everything from housing solutions to our 911, 311 solution to support for gay and lesbian youth. They really try to harness cities and counties and states to do different types of work through data and technology. Not sure if you know Beth Nyblock. She was the CIO for Detroit, who's now going to be the CIO of HUD. But if she led the rebuilding of technology for Detroit when it went through its bankruptcy. So basically from scratch, when people were using Hotmail accounts. Brad Hardick, actually in your neighborhood, Scottsdale, he just retired, but he's one of the most collaborative CIOs in the country. And then on the coalition builder side, I'm going to throw lots of names. This is how much we partner. Terry Takai and Phil Bertolini at the Center for Digital Government. Rob Silverberg at Dell, been able to do some really cool work with him. Franco Amalfi. He's now with Google. Frank Rimmelman and Tim Romer in Arizona, I think, actually have a very novel approach to security and cybersecurity and organization building. Tim Woodbury and Splunk, we got to work with him and a number of others when we were doing COVID response. Even Mari Blackman, who used to be the CEO of Accela, is investing in some various technology companies. But we love the real stories.
Wow, that's amazing. Don, we don't have to do any work. We got our list for the rest of the year. Rob, just make a few introductions. We're set. Appreciate it.
Happy to do it. That's actually the coolest thing about public sector and civic tech is, unlike private sector where they succeed and they hide their work because it's competitive advantage, in public sector, we share it. We love being first, but we like sharing just as much.
Yeah, it's a lot like education. It's great.
Yeah, we lift each other.
It's a great community. All right. Well, with that, Rob, we really appreciate the Urban Complex. Gives a big note of thanks to today's guest, Rob Lloyd, CIO of the City of San Jose. Thanks for joining us, Rob.
Thanks, Rob.
Absolutely. Thank you.
The Greater Phoenix Economic Council, known as GPEC, was named the top economic development organization in the U.S. in 2020. As a data-driven regional organization, GPEC serves as a strategic partner to companies across the world as they expand or relocate to other markets. Over the past 31 years, GPEC has fueled the Greater Phoenix economy by helping more than 850 companies and creating more than 154,000 jobs. Leaders in Greater Phoenix are building the nation's most innovative and connected smart region through The Connective. This community-driven applied research model deploys technology at scale. For more information about GPEC, visit gpec.org.
All right, Don, that was Rob Lloyd, City of San Jose. What do you think?
Man, I knew it was going to be exciting. What a tremendous guest. I mean, if I could encapsulate what I hope to get out of this podcast by listening to stories, that was it right there. Yeah. I mean, so many good nuggets in that podcast, in that story. That
things to avoid as well as just the success stories too. You know, yeah. It's really cool.
Completely. No matter if you're a city manager, CIO, innovation officer, I mean, you could pull something out of that podcast that's going to help you in your career and in your efforts. So two things that I want to just highlight on that I really took too many notes on, but one, again, you know, I always love to talk about the governance and organizational structures and how can cities and city managers and CIOs think about how to best structurally organize themselves to be the most successful in smart city efforts, because it does take a different mindset, a different structure in order to be successful than the traditional. And what I loved is that he came in and it was kind of like his demand, like, hey, you have to enable provide me a structure that's going to enable me to be successful. And I love the idea of, I need someone in the deputy city manager's office that's going to be a tech champion for when these projects are coming down, whether it's a housing project, a park project, that they're going to be the one championing the inclusion of tech and innovation. So more on the kind of administration side. And then he said, I need a political champion. And this is what I love, because this is kind of my role in what I do. I need someone that's going to go out there and tell the elected officials the difference between the world they think it is and the world it is, right? And get them to understand what is needed from the city staff and the city management in order to achieve the outcomes that usually these politicians, the elected officials, want to drive at. So you need that kind of administrative champion and the political champion, because sometimes, you know, the two heads of those bodies don't quite speak the same language. So I just love that idea. And then of course the camaraderie ship of a lot of CIOs and CIOs, innovation and information butt heads. When his innovation officer came in, he literally just started communicating up front, said, hey, we're gonna work great together. We're gonna be the best. Let's go out and do cool stuff. Right. And that's how you build a relationship. So I thought that was phenomenal. And then the last thing I want to
hit on. So hold on before you change subjects. Yeah. You know, because you need those areas of alignment, because as he said, technology is the easy part, but it's powered by people, it's powered by processes. So if you don't have the right structure in place where you're at the table, where you're influencing the policy so that it flows well into the system, and you don't have you know, basically the ability to scale it, you end up with what he inherited. I mean, talk about horrible metrics, right? 5% affect successful projects, the worst employee ratings in the nation. I mean, oh my gosh. Well, at least kudos to him. Talk about major risk in his career to go into that. Although then again, anything but up, but yeah, I just think it's important to call that out. So
he loves big challenge. That was a big challenge. Yeah. I loved it. But you're right. Cause you know, all it takes is one political official to not understand it and say no, or it just takes, you know, a city manager to not think about tech, and then now you're trying to add tech from the back. And it's, again, it's just perfect alignment. I love the structure. And then the last thing quickly that I loved was kind of at the end, I wrote it down in big, huge words, is he loves people that dream it and do it, right? Not just talk to talk, not stop, let's stop smart cities for a press release. I thought that was powerful. It reminded me of Michael from Dublin. They don't talk about it unless they can take a picture of it, right? It's just,
yeah, that was a great, that's a great reminder. Yeah.
That's the approach I think we all need to take, right? The get stuff done people, GSD. I just,
and make it real for people, right? Like, and that kind of leads into where I want to focus. Boy, when we got him talking about, well, what's working, what are you excited about? How are you working with partnerships? I mean, it's like we got this ball rolling downhill. We didn't want to stop. I mean, they're talking about meal deployment for homeless at scale. We've heard the Bay Area's had challenges there. The high school references, like some of the underserved communities, like there's some parts you don't think of San Jose as having, low income, but there's some rough parts. And they had a Wi-Fi model that worked, and he actually found a way to scale it 5x in response to COVID. I mean, so he's in the right place at the right time. I mean, they're even creating policy that is designed for them, but also for other cities to use. I mean, what a great thought! And yeah, he actually referenced some folks he's working with Arizona to make that happen. I mean, it goes on the list. I mean, they helped save a ridiculous amount of calls, and actually then converted those calls even into automated chat. So he's showing that he's watching what's working and finding a way to either use the partnership or, as he said, get the right people and build the process that scales so they can do it effectively. Yeah. There's so much positive there.
And I mean, he started it out with, again, going back to this, he started out with, he loves big challenges. I mean, some of those projects that he's been successful with, right? I think lowering response time by 24 seconds, that's unheard of. that's crazy. That's like going from, well, we were riding horses and carriages to cars. Like, it's so hard to lower response times by that much. These are big challenges that a city alone will never be able to accomplish. It takes partners, like I think in that case, Verizon, to help, right? And so if you want to solve big challenges, you've got to think big partnerships. And what did he say that I thought was really interesting? Let me see if I can find it in the note. And he's like, I'm going to challenge you both, but it's not the things you get done. Or no, I can't remember what it was. It's what I find most satisfying in my career. It's thinking about who I got to work with and the impact delivered together. I thought
that's exactly what he's talking about. It's like, and you relish that along the way. It's not, it's the journey, and it's taking the risks together and knowing how to work with each other. But it goes back to his first parts that you highlighted in the beginning. It's like you align in the right places, you align with the right groups, you focus on the right things. That's how you solve real problems.
Yeah. What a great story. So, I mean, we're definitely going to have Rob back to see where he's at with all those projects and probably see what 100 other projects he's got done successfully. So, great guest today. But what about cracks in the pavement? Let's transition. What are you reading about this week?
Well, it's funny. It kind of fits in nicely to what Rob was talking about on some levels, too. So the title is called Global Cities Still Falling Short on Governance of Smart City Tech. Not that Rob is not doing that, but there was a few highlights of where it was going good with open data. They highlighted San Jose. Plus, they also talked about how some of these smart movements really have no clue on the data privacy. So again, you think back to what Rob is doing, is he sees a big problem that there's all this tech opportunity, but people haven't really thought through the ramifications. They haven't thought through the tech governance. They haven't thought through the data privacy impacts. And so let's get started on that stuff. It's really interesting as well. One of the things I pulled out of here that I thought was interesting was that it detailed surveys of officials. They found less than a quarter conduct privacy impact assessments when deploying new technology, meaning they're just providing tech for tech's sake. They're not really thinking through the ramifications. That's pretty scary if you think about it.
It is incredibly scary. And I mean, this is the challenge of smart cities, right? I mean, pandemic happens, all of a sudden kids are sent home, they don't have internet. You've got the parents calling City Hall, demanding the mayor to provide a solution tomorrow or yesterday, right? And so cities are always confronted with this pressure to deliver a solution right now to solve a challenge, and then yet get knocked for it because they deliver it, they solve the need, but wait, we didn't take enough time to think about it. I would love to dig in more to this conversation because I think it's such a catch-22 for cities. I mean, think about if they said, well, you know what, we're going to take a year to think about privacy and security while your student gets to sit at home with no Wi-Fi, right? I mean, it's a hard, hard conversation to have, but I think that's why we need to start these conversations now, so that way when incidents, what did our guest say, shocks happen, we're ready, we're prepared. I think this just highlights that we weren't prepared. So now's a great time. I see it's Jeff Merritt. I used to know him back when he was with New York and is working now at the World Economic Forum. This is great. This is great. And it's going to...
And we've heard a lot of folks, like, it reminds me of like Peachtree Corners, right? Maybe you don't know the answer, but you get something out there in a very limited context in a controlled manner. And then, but you inform yourself for what the ramifications are, and then you create the governance. There's nothing wrong with that. You find a way to control the experiment. And sometimes that's the way you solve the problem, is you try something and you get something out there, not just to pilot and press release, but actually pilot, learn, all right, do we scale or do we morph? And there's nothing wrong with that kind of pivot approach if it's the wrong thing. So I think it fits in nicely to a lot of the themes we've seen.
Yeah, I think that's why the sandboxes, right, are so interesting. Like test, if it doesn't work, pivot and then try to scale. But policy sandboxes as well. I think we need to take more advantage of kind of some policy sandboxes to understand how might we more agilely adopt policy. Because I mean, think about cities trying to adopt a data privacy policy, probably San Jose, right? He was able to get it done pretty successfully. Other cities struggle.
Well, they probably don't have the privacy officer, right? They don't even have that focus. Totally. And maybe it's in the hands of, say, someone that does community outreach. Well, they're just trying to get the perspective of the citizen. Citizen, I mean, think about how a citizen handles privacy and some of the stuff they give to the big tech companies. Like it's not necessarily done from an enterprise city management service provider's point of view either. So you have to have very nuanced approach. It's not an easy solution. I'm not surprised to hear the results, but we are seeing some of our guests that have had success in this area of governance. So I think they'll figure out. And then if you've got groups like Rob that are willing to share what they do, I mean, talk about a great way to add value and help rise the boats for everyone.
Yep, exactly. I think it ends with what you just talked about. It's partnerships, right? If you don't have the resources internally, reach out to partners in your community, right? The university. I mean, ASU has a chief trust officer, a chief.
Yeah, no, I was thinking that as well. Donna Kidwell, digital trust. And really, they're doing all sorts of research. They're really looking at things differently. And you're right. They probably be willing to help too.
They're always willing to help. Yeah. Well, hey, Chris, great episode today, man. This was fun.
All right. See y'all.
Yep. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to The Urban Complex, smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow. Please find us on where you listen, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. We do love your feedback. Let us know if you have ideas for guests or questions to air on Cracks in the Pavement via social media. The Urban Complex is found on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. Or just shoot me an email, chris@theurbancomplex.com. Till next time.